Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy whose favorite 11-letter word is bamboozling, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast here, voicemail edition for episode number 11 of Survivor Game Changers. And we got a fun show today coming up with Akiva Whitaker, who is my co-host on the Seinfeld post-show recap over on postshowrecaps.com. We just entered season 9 of that. It's been a 3-year journey to get to this point, and we are now in the final season of recaps over there on our Seinfeld podcast. So big, momentous summer of Kiev coming up on post-show recaps. Of course, I got into everything with John Cochran, super-sized recap podcast, and not that much recapping going on, but a great conversation and deep dive into all things Cochran in that episode. I highly suggest you check it out if you have not done so yet on robhasawebsite.com, plus my exit interview with Zeke, and of course the Survivor Know-It-Alls, all there if you subscribe, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Before we get to our podcast with Keeve, I want to take a moment and thank a sponsor. Those are friends over at NatureBox. Of course, NatureBox makes great tasting, healthier for you snacks, and they send them right to your door, because when you want a snack, don't be tempted by the junk food and have to rely on your self-control to resist temptation. You'll end up eating that junk food. You could start snacking healthier with NatureBox, because NatureBox makes snacks that taste great and are better for you, created with high-quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so that you can feel great about snacking. You don't have to be like Sandra and eating up all that sugar. My personal favorites, love the peanut butter covered pretzels, always like the pistachio power clusters. NatureBox has just made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without any minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. It's simple. Just go to naturebox.com, check out their snack catalog, over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Choose the snacks that you want. They deliver them right to your door. And with NatureBox, you'll never get bored with new snacks each month, inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever have a snack that you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. So right now, NatureBox will save you even more. For our listeners, 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/RHA. That's naturebox.com/RHAP on your first order at naturebox.com/RHAP. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring this person back to the Survivor voicemails. It's been quite some time since we were able to go through everything for a Survivor episode. Here he is, the co-host of the Seinfeld post-show recap, and of course, the 32 Fans NFL and More podcast. Here is the great Akiva Whitaker. Akiva, how are you?
Wow, thanks for that intro. Soon to be ex-host of the Seinfeld podcast.
Yes, yes, soon to be, because we are in the final stretch run. We've entered season 9, the final season. And of course, as many of our listeners know, that this is the season where we are not allowing any new listeners to the podcast.
That's right. Everyone who's with us since day one is still there. But anybody who's just coming along now, the bandwagon listeners, they're banned. Like, I mean, in theory, you could probably go to Posha Recaps and like work around the passwords, or like go to iTunes and find the podcast, but good luck.
Good luck with that. I don't think anybody's ever done this before. No podcast has ever closed the books after a certain point. I think that we are real pioneers.
It's like a Patreon, but with no money. Like, we only allow you to listen to it for free, but you got to sign up for it.
Yes, you have to have been listening for the previous 8 seasons, or if you just even came on during season 8. All right, but we have a lot to talk about as we are in season 34 of Survivor, Keeve, talking about the Game Changers. First off, how are you doing? It's an ungodly hour for you, right?
Yeah, I'm playing a late night game here, but this is going to be my Michael Jordan flu game. I'm not feeling well. It's like 2:48 in the morning, but we'll work through.
Oh, only 2:48? I thought it was like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, man. I should have just woken up and done this. I didn't think about it.
All right. So we have a lot of stuff to get into from this week's episode, coming off of a marathon podcast with Cochran, who was here recently today. Keeve, is there a lot of hype for Cochran podcast?
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like there's a little bit of an overkill between Cochran and me. We're like the same guy. So...
yeah.
You know, but I am excited to listen to it. You should like let the voicemail person hear the podcast, because now I'm going to make all the same points that he made yesterday.
Oh, I doubt it. That's quite doubtful that you'll be able to hit
on. What was he saying? That was so crazy.
No, I think that we were just all over the place. So I doubt you'll repeat anything that he said. But if you did, I will let you know. So, Keith, just a big picture, just to get your take on Game Changers. Great season, good season, so-so season?
I mean, I think it's still to be determined. If the season ended tonight, I guess I'd be annoyed there was no winner. But like to me, it's a slightly below average season at best right now. But there's definitely a lot of room for improvement.
And here we are within 3 weeks until the finale. Can you believe it? I feel like the season really did just start.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about like the 12-week season and the two double episodes. But right, it's weird because we're on day 30, but there's 9 people left and the finale is literally in 20 days from today.
Yeah, this is like feeling like some sort of like strike shortens the season.
Right. Right. I think we might have gotten many more seasons if the strike had actually happened.
Right. Right. That might have helped with the reality TV. OK, in terms of the overall gameplay right now, Keeve. So did you like seeing what we saw last night with Andrea and Suri targeting Zeke?
I mean, you know, it's an age old Survivor thing where like the person who claims that, you know, that you're sort of in a semi alliance with them versus the person who's very vocally, or the people who are very vocally not in alliance with you. And it seems like for like a decade now, the person like an Andrea has decided to vote out the Zeke's, the person who like we're pretending to be friends, but we're not, over the person who's very like obviously not with you.
Yeah. And what do you feel like the track record is on this?
We really need to study. We need our boy Sean Falconer to make a chart. But I actually think it would be, you know, it would really require like a crazy rewatch. But I think it's actually an interesting question.
Yeah. So what's more dangerous? The person that's coming after you, your full on enemy, or the person who's acting like your friend, but you know is your enemy?
I mean, don't you have a slight chance of getting, you know, what you want from the you know, Zeke in this situation if you're Andrea, versus you have no chance for whoever your, you know, biggest enemy is?
Yeah, I do think so. But there is the old thing about keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So,
yeah. But is that like Stephen Hawking said that, or that's just like a lame cliche?
I don't know. Stephen Hawking says a lot of troubling things that he said that.
Yeah, he said 100 years, we got to be off the earth. Let me tell you right now, Rob, I'm not going to be around in 100 years, but there's no way I'm leaving the earth. I will be like the last guy when the asteroid's going to come. Space looks terrible.
100 years. I mean, that's a tall order.
Right. I think it's almost like Armageddon style. We got to start building, you know, hiring the drillers to start, you know, becoming astronauts and getting up there because we're in trouble.
Yeah. I don't want to bum everybody out with that. But yeah, that seems like a lot to do in 100 years.
I feel like we should just ignore it and let the world, like our great grandkids will have to deal with the world.
Yeah, maybe he's off on that. Okay. So many times on the Seinfeld podcast, we like to start our feedback segment off in a certain place. So I thought it'd be fitting if you and I began here in the same way. And why don't we kick things off with a voicemail from the great Johnny D. Silvera. And he has a question about Sarah last night.
Hey, Robin and Akiva. Johnny D. Silvera here. Would it have been better for Sarah's endgame to save Zeke by flipping to the minority alliance, stealing Andrea's vote, and voting out somebody in the majority alliance? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Love you, Bay.
Love you, Bay. All right. So, Keeve, let's talk this through. So, Sarah was also aligned with Zeke, but she went along with the plan to take him out at this tribal council. Did you like Johnny's idea of using the vote steal to potentially save him?
I think it's a little too early to use the vote steal. I also think that, you know, Sarah is the flipper from the last episode. If she becomes the primary flipper again, she all of a sudden becomes like the Tony, except she's not shielded by tons of idols. Like, she really is target number one going forward, whereas right now, she might not be.
Yeah, you feel like that she has just flipped a little bit. You know, I've been down on that she voted off Debbie last week, but I feel like that Debbie was enough of a soft target that nobody's really mad at her for voting Debbie off.
Right, she doesn't have a key ally that's sitting there in the game stewing and saying, I'm getting blood for Debbie.
Right, right. I think that Debbie was just like, okay, sure. That was a number for us, but nobody really seemed that upset. They're just sort of more bummed out that they're down.
Right, and I also think, like, you vote at Debbie, maybe there's a couple people that around camp are happy to see her go. So I think, ultimately, people get over it pretty quickly.
When is the earliest in the game you could use that vote steal?
I mean, it's really just the numbers thing, right? Like, we're going to have... it's probably, you know, if they had a 5-5, you could use it at 10, but the vote steal is weird because you're not really relying on the odd numbers as much as, you know, certain other advantages, right?
Yeah. Now, I know you're a numbers guy. Do you like having all the advantages in the game? I know it's a little polarizing.
I don't mind it personally. I do think, like, sometimes I view the show through the eyes of like a casual viewer, like my sister who watches almost every season, but doesn't really think about the show after, you know, at 9 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday night when it's over. Real, you know, just a casual viewer who loves the show. There is no way. I was discussing with Mike Bloom last week, like, all right, who has each advantage? And there was, you know, five idols and advantages in the game. And I was thinking, like, Mike Bloom is, you know, one of the 10 like smartest survivor minds in the world. And like, he had to think about it for
maybe
a few
15.
Seconds.
Right.
15. Top, like, he just fell out of the top 10 in our rankings. But if Mike Bloom, you know, like, Mike Bloom is going to figure that out. But what percent did, you know, 8-point-something million people watch the show last night? Like, what percentage of the people can actually track who has what advantage and what they do? I feel like it's pretty small. That doesn't mean that we should cater to the people who aren't tracking the show. But I do think, like, they do risk losing people a little bit.
Yeah, I think that it's something that needs to be clearly reset before those things happen. Like, I'm pretty sure most people, like when Ty and Troy's man were talking about idols, like Ty mentioned that he has two idols, but I'm sure most people forgot that Troy also has an idol.
Right. The show, a lot of shows like The Challenge or some other reality shows will really reset you. The Bachelor will spend like 10 minutes every week. I hear. I've never seen it. The good save, Keith. Recapping what happened, and there's no idols or advantages there. So it's just, you know, actual plot. Whereas here, there, you know, I like the fact that the show, you know, assumes like a higher level of understanding, but it is a little tricky, I'd imagine, for the average person at home. But also, they don't care. Again, they're just watching the show maybe, and they're not really like steaming about who has it. I think the idea of the 13 and 6, which is such like an arbitrary number, who's really tracking that? I feel like nobody.
Right. In terms of that, oh, hey, 6 is coming up. Sierra Dawn Thomas can use the legacy advantage.
Right. And the idea that if you get voted out, like the transfer happens off screen. It's an interesting idea, but I feel like television wise, it's, you know, it remains to be seen how it'll work. But I feel like my expectations for it are pretty low.
Okay, Keeve, I know you are an expert odds maker. What are the odds right now that there will be a legacy advantage in Survivor 35?
I mean, it really depends on how it's used. I would lean towards them. You know, Jeff is like to mix things up. The people who are playing 35, did they see season 34? I guess that's a small factor also.
I think they saw the beginning. They saw the first couple
of weeks. The beginning?
Yeah.
They had to leave in the middle. I think I'd say 50-50, 2-1. To me, it's too soon to really decide, but I'm personally not a big fan. I feel like a lot of times they'll try something twice, and if it doesn't work the second time, they ditch it.
Yeah, I just don't know, where's the juice here on the legacy advantage?
Yeah, a lot of times people pitch ideas, right, on, you have podcasts where people pitch ideas, or on Twitter or something, people will pitch Jeff ideas, and he's always like, you need to explain it really, you know, succinctly. Like, to me, if you have to keep going, then even if it's a cool idea, this isn't the genius, right? Like, we don't have like an unspoken person just, you know, giving you like 5 minutes of explanation.
Yeah.
So I you know, the simpler, I don't want to say the simpler, the better, but I, you know, it has to make sense strategically and make good TV. And I'm not sure that advantage does.
Let's keep talking about last night's vote, and let's discuss it from this angle with Amanda from PA.
Hey, Robin Keeve. What do you think the blowback is going to be next week regarding Ty and the 3 votes he got last night? Thanks.
Okay, what about this from Ty's perspective, that this has got to be a very sad wake-up call for Ty when he realizes that all of his top allies voted for him?
Right, so Ty has been voted against in this game, right? In the Sandra vote, he got a couple votes against him.
Yeah.
But I think, was he really threatened that episode? I'm not sure. But here, I do think you're right. This is a big wake-up call. Now, we're getting so close to the end. He's got two idols. You almost have to think, if he even feels like 1% danger next week, he's got to use one, right?
How did he not play an idol at this tribal council?
I mean, he felt really comfortable, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's not a good sign.
No, I mean, listen, we've seen Ty play from ahead, right?
Mm-hmm.
We never really saw him scramble or play from behind. Like you said, this is really the first time he's sort of felt the heat in two seasons of playing.
Yeah.
So we don't exactly know how Ty's going to respond, but it'll be actually interesting to see if he freaks out next week, if he's calm, if he really is able to turn things around.
I do think that you could win Ty back over. I feel like that we've seen him, especially in Ko Rong, like go back and forth a couple times. And if he is wishy-washy at all, like I've seen with Aubrey herself back in Ko Rong, the ability to sort of win him back over.
You know, I don't know who the Ty whisperer out here is right now, but if you're saying Aubrey, I guess that's an option.
I think it's Brad.
Yeah, it could be Brad, but Brad just voted for him.
Yeah, but he could say like, oh, they made me do it. Andrea told me to do it. He's like, oh, that's not cool.
I know. But once someone votes for you, it's different than, you know, it's different than just like voting for differently than you, but not for you, I think.
Right. You know, it changes if they're able to sort of like get that Sarah and Michaela thing, if they could swing over and then join with that group with Brad and Troyzan. Again, the plan could be if they are going to go through with that, they may want to go ahead. Let's vote out Andrea. Let's vote out Ty. Let's vote off all these other people. And then ultimately, that's where they're going to try to make their move.
Yeah, that's possible.
Keeve, let's take a question from Ariel, who wants to know about Suri and her lack of being the center of attention.
Hi, Robin, Keeve. This is Ariel. Last night on Know It All, Stephen mentioned that as soon as your name is on the list of people being discussed to vote out, it's very hard to get off of that list. So inversely, if your name doesn't come up at all, then it most likely means that you're safe for the moment. So how is it at this late stage of the game that Suri's name isn't being brought up at all? We all know how clever and strong of a social player she is, and I'm sure that many of the people in the game are also aware of her gameplay, so how come her name isn't being brought up? Was the balance beam scene from last week meant to convey in some way that she doesn't have a shot to win? Why do you think that no one seems to be targeting her? Don't get me wrong, I love Suri, and I would love to see her get to the end of the game. I would just think that there would be more concern from the others in that actually happening. I'll finish this voicemail in the style of Keeve's dad.
Yeah, okay. Rabbit Wienerker shout out.
Yeah. So what do you think of this and Suri not necessarily being too high of a priority for anybody? Is this idiocy or is this a testament to Suri's amazing social game?
I think a little bit of both, right? Suri hasn't got a single vote against her yet, but nor has Brad or Troyzan or Sarah, right? If I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me if I'm wrong. I think I'm right. The idea that you could just let Suri linger, I know there's always another target, but there's no like, you know, Superman out there who's like the traditional, like, oh, we got to get this guy the second he loses, you know, an individual immunity. I had someone I know went to Andrea or Meg's charity event yes. a couple weeks ago, and they spoke to Suri and they couldn't stop talking afterwards about how like, oh, I totally get it. Like she just like within 5 minutes, you're just in there, you know, you're. Like you would vote for her to win $1 million. Like she really has a charisma that very few people have. So on one hand, like they're insane for letting her stick around. On the other hand, like maybe she's the cause of them doing that.
It's just amazing if she ends up going on to win this season. Could we say, is this her best work yet, Keeve?
Well, if she wins, I mean, not, you know, you just made like yeah. Colin Stone's head explode. Okay. But I think the. I mean, obviously it could be. I don't know. We're like fantasy booking the rest of the season.
So I guess that maybe a different way to ask that question is, do you feel like that her performance here is on par with what she did in Panama and Micronesia? Or is this better?
It's a little different, right? Because she's been, forgetting about heroes, villains, like she's been much more under the radar than in those two seasons so far, mm-hmm. right? So it's almost hard to say slash... Like, you know, there are a lot of things we could talk about it more. Like, there's a lot of things I feel like we're not seeing. I was listening to all of Zeke's exit interviews today, and there were just so many things he brought up that I'm like, wow, I can't believe that has not been even alluded to on the show yet.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, for starters, he told Mike Bloom. I think he just told you. He told you also by the way, shout out Mike Bloom, parade.com.
Yes.
He told Mike Bloom that there was really a Redemption Island / Caramone style of back and forth. You know, with the idea of like, you know, talking to people who aren't on your you know, in your alliance and on your team, which we did see a little bit, right, with Andrea, who's like, I guess, notably paranoid, right, with when they discussed the Oklahoma football game at the reward challenge, right?
Right.
But other than that, we haven't seen much of it. By the way, that the football conversation, it was like going on long. There's 34 seasons of the show. I can't remember like the last super long, like. Random, like this is a conversation people sort of just have, like talking about sports, but 10-year-old sports. And it made me really self-conscious because, like, that's like every conversation I have all day with anyone I know. And I'm like, oh, this is really boring. Like, am I just, you know,
that's
like,
every episode boring people of 32 by talking fans. About sports? Right.
And even like, we'll just sometimes like start talking on the Seinfeld podcast about the Mets bullpen. And I'll be like, there's like people in Australia who listen who have no idea what we're talking about. But I do think it made me self-conscious that, like, oh, no, this might be boring. Then I realized, like, no, it's probably super interesting. And I'm going to double down and do more of it.
Double down. Exactly. Okay. So, but what was the Redemption Island part of it where it was like if you were talking to somebody from the other side,
Boston
that was
Rob,
bad?
The Boston Rob style thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which was something that we keyed into last night because obviously that's the season that Andrea came up in. I mean, that does make some sense in terms of why that would be so offensive to her. Now, in terms of Ceri winning, do you think that she can beat Andrea?
Yeah, if I wanted to like quickly rank, you know, who left has a chance.
Okay.
I think, well, let's throw out, I don't know if we have to go 1 to 9, but like Michaela.
No,
right
do
now.
It. Do it. I want power rankings.
Okay. All right. I'm going to say Michaela 9.
Yeah, she has the worst
I'm
shot
trying
to
not
win.
To factor in the, I'm not trying not to factor in the edit that much.
Okay.
Like the idea, Troy Zinn has 9 confessionals, Rob. Like Troy Zinn has 2 more confessionals than Caleb.
Okay.
Like, who wasn't even on this season, you know?
Right.
Like, he has less confessionals than Tony. So realistically, like, if he wins, we've never, this is like Natalie White, you know, cubed. Like, this is insane.
Okay.
But I'll say, just because it you know, another thing that they're sort of not showing is like, she's rubbing people the wrong way and we're being told about it, but not really seeing, like, what is she doing wrong? Are they covering up things that she's doing? You know, because she's getting a decent edit and they're sort of not showing it, but it exists. Or maybe more likely, like, I don't know, maybe she ticked off a producer and she's getting like a bad edit, but there's not really like right. a lot of meat on the bone. I'm not sure.
That's like a real conspiracy theory.
No, I just think like everyone who's coming out, like, yeah, people weren't really feeling Michaela, but we're not given like the greatest reason why, right?
Okay. All right. So bottom of the power rankings is Michaela. Who's next?
I'm just going to say Troy Zinn. I mean, how could we, you know, gauge his game when we haven't seen it?
Now, again, I feel like that you're saying two things. You said, well, I'm not going to factor in edit. And then you're
oh,
saying,
I'm a huge liar. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a liar.
Right. Troy Zinn is 8
but again, like,
he has 7
not,
professionals.
But Troy Zinn gets an NA. Like if someone's being shown really positively versus like neutrally or negatively, maybe I could throw it to the side, but like, if right. we're literally not seeing them, then I, you know, I can't like pretend like we are seeing them.
Yeah. The only storyline he had in the whole season was when he found the idol back when he was like on the outs.
Yes. I mean, we've just seen so little of him. He disappeared. Like there's only 10 people left. It's hard to not get a confessional. I believe he's the only person this week to not get one. Like it's really, he was, you know, it's shocking. Like how little they liked him enough to bring him back, even though the audience kind of said, no, thanks. Right. With second
right,
chances.
He didn't
like,
get voted in. Right.
He didn't get voted in, and you know, it maybe worked for Brad, but didn't work as much for Troy Zinn, at
okay.
least so far.
Number 7.
I'm going to say Brad 7 strictly because of the money thing. I just think the idea of like, not only is he really wealthy, like really, really wealthy, but everyone says he talks about how wealthy he is. I don't, not that that's rubbing, like I'm sure he tells cool stories, but I think like it's just, it would be, they would have to absolutely love him and detest the other two people in the final 3.
I think you're sleeping on Brad Culpepper. I think that's really low.
I just can't see him beating 2 other people.
Everything we've heard about him this season from everybody is that they love him so much as a guy. You just yeah. think out of this one thing that he is a wealthy person that they won't vote for him.
The one thing like
council?
Who they're giving $1 million to. Yeah, that one thing like not to the person who has millions of dollars already. By the way, I'm not saying I do that. I would try not to factor in if I was on a jury, try not to factor in a person's situation at home or else, you know, every season would, you know, you're just like Dawn has 6 kids and Cochran doesn't. So, you know, Dawn automatically wins. Like I'm not doing need based winners, but it would be, I think we had this conversation in season 32 when I was on, but like, you know, it such like an opulent winner. It would be, I don't know. It would be interesting.
I don't know. I just think, I don't think that's how people vote. I think that maybe if like, oh, I like this person and I like this person, you know, I love Tina and I love Colby, but you know, Tina could use the money, you know, maybe that's how people vote, but I just don't know necessarily if there is one person you like and the other people you're not as fond of and the person that you like has money, would you say, oh, well, screw that. I mean, these are returning players too.
I understand, but they're also like more cognizant of like everyone's situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. To me, like, again, I'm not even defending the strategy because I'm saying I wouldn't do it. But I mean, if we could use exit, can we use exit interviews as canon? Like, everyone yeah. mentions how rich he is. Like every single person who gets voted out is like, yeah, you know, Brad had a lot of money. And maybe they're throwing us off. Maybe, you know, Ozzy and people are super geniuses, but I'm not sure.
I don't think that's come up in any of my chats with people, but maybe I just don't remember it. Okay. Because I'm not as obsessed with, you know,
money as me.
Finances.
Okay,
you know, I judge people by their character.
Okay.
All right. Number six.
I'm going to say for six, I'm going to say Sierra. I just think like the odds of her, even though, you know, she calls herself the sheriff, I think FFSDT is, you know, I just can't see her going to the end and being seen as this mastermind.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So that who do you have at five?
I should have been numbering these, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Ty at five. I think he's probably learned something from Tribal Council if he, you know, from Final Trouble if he gets back. I think there's not really anybody who doesn't like him. It wouldn't be outrageous. Like if he gets the right people to the end, two of the people we mentioned already, he could definitely win.
And you saw the Ko-Rong finale?
I just think he learned from it. You know, he didn't have the 2 weeks that Zeke had. I feel like he had, you know, listen, he'd have to get there against two people who were disliked by the jury. I'm not saying he's number one. Again, one of the reasons this season isn't great is because there aren't a lot of great viable winners. Like, yes, we're at five and we're at tie, but, and maybe I'm stupid for thinking that, but it's not like there's 10 heavy hitters out there. Like we're in Cagayan and there's so many people left, you know, it's everyone but Wu is like, oh yeah, they could for sure win.
Okay. Give me number four.
All right. So who do we have left? We have Andrea,
Aubrey, Suri, and Sarah.
Suri is definitely one.
Okay.
I just think she's going to be an assassin at the end. It won't be a lifetime achievement award, but like she deserves it and she'll probably take it home.
Sure.
If Andrea ends up running the game and she gets to the end, there will be a few bitter people against her. I don't know, like she's the, you know, she's going to win an 8-1 or 9-0 jury, but it's not like Andrea is going to be able to say like, you know, I was maybe the best physical player out there. I had a decent social game. People don't really hate her. And she was making a lot of moves and a lot of decisions. So I think Andrea is my two. And then you could toss up between Sarah and Aubrey. I'd say Sarah three, Aubrey four, but you know, that's only because we've seen so much of Sarah and so little of Aubrey. Again, I'm violating my rule.
Okay. All right. So, your top three, I find it hard to quibble with.
Right. But how many people would you say have zero chance of winning of the nine people left?
I feel like I would say Michaela, Ty, and I'm like teetering on Troyzan.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a little higher on Ty, but I that you have my eight and nine, right? And
right.
There's nobody like that's cartoonishly inept like in some other seasons where, you know, even going into the finale, Jeff will say like, oh, you know, Sherry has no chance to win. There's nobody like that that has like a 0.00%.
Yeah, when did Jeff say that?
Go back. Why? I keep like dropping facts and you say that you're disagreeing with me. Okay. Jeff told Dalton Ross.
Yes.
Before the season 26.
Well, I think you're talking about on the show. I didn't know you're talking about.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
in
sorry.
In Jeff Probst's interviews with Dalton Ross,
yes.
He said Sherry has no chance
to win. That's canon, Rob.
Okay. I get it that that's canon, but I thought you were saying that he said it on the show.
You hear what I'm saying.
Right.
Right. But if he says someone has no chance to win, like, you know, in an interview, I feel like you could write them off. So my point is there's nobody that's like ridiculously, you know, that has a 0% chance. But obviously there's a couple people that don't have a chance.
All right. Keeve, let's take this question. This is from Brock from Illinois. Here is Brock's question.
Hey, Rob, it's Brock from Alton, Illinois. Random ass town. I have two questions, and they both have to pertain to Troyzan. The first thing I noticed in this episode, he is wearing a Livestrong bracelet. What is it, 2001? That is weird. Second thing, does Jeff not like Troyzan very much? During the challenge, whenever he was taken off the immunity necklace, I noticed that Jeff wanted nothing to do with Troyzan. So, just want to know what you guys thought. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Keith, is that out to wear a Livestrong bracelet?
I'm not like the biggest fashion expert in the world, but I could see Troyzan being like really good friends with Lance Armstrong and he's still like a Lance Armstrong truther and thinks he's totally innocent.
Yeah.
Like in his heart, he still won seven Tour de France.
I believe that the bracelet, I think, stands for more than just supporting Lance Armstrong. I think
is the charity dead, though? I really don't know. I hear that it's not like trendy anymore, but the charity may still exist. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, to go to the second point for Brock, again, I'd say leave the bracelet alone. In terms of the second part, does Jeff Probst dislike Troyzan? Now, we talked about sort of like the awkward hug from last week. Then there was this moment from the episode, which I thought was interesting. Here is Jeff when he had to take the necklace back from Troyzan.
Things first, Troyzan. Gotta take it back. Damn. Spin and grin.
Spin and grin?
Yeah, and you didn't get the hashtag you wanted out of that.
Yeah, hashtag spin and grin. What the hell is spin and grin, Keev?
I don't know. It's day 30 for probes, too, on the end of a back-to-back. You might be tired also.
Spin and grin.
You know, I made like a little note. I'll pretend I make notes while I watch the episode. Like, oh, you know, they could have easily cut out those 2 seconds. But then I thought after, like, okay, maybe like that's the only Troyzan we're almost getting in the episode. So they needed to have a little Troyzan. And like, here's, you know, him giving back the idol. But I agree. It was like weird. And then he asked for the hashtag. If he asked for the hashtag and you get rejected like Mutombo style, that's not a great sign for you.
So you feel like that was bad for Troyzan that he asked, hey, is that the hashtag? And then CBS did not put the hashtag up on the screen.
Right. I think it's getting a little meta also. Like if you ask for the hashtag, you should not be allowed to get it. Have there been that many hashtags? I really don't pay a lot of attention to it anymore.
There had been, certainly. I don't think there were that many last night, but there was like, remember, like coffee is for closers. Yeah. You know what? Going back to that, that was, again, the hashtag seemed like they were trolling Troyzan on that one, too, right? That was like an absurd hashtag to put up on the screen. Coffee is for closers. And they're saying like Troyzan, not a closer.
Spinning green.
So maybe maybe he's getting like this villain edit, but he's, you know, they don't have a lot of like,
what is he doing? Why is he a
villain? He's not being villainous, but he's just like, maybe they have to explain why he, you know, gets idled out or he loses in the final three. Like there's no like real story to tell, but you have, you know, he's still in the game. There's 9 people left. Like he's got to have something.
Yeah. I don't know. This is really a developing story. And I'm not talking like how you develop pictures.
Click, 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 click.
Oh boy.
So yeah, I'm starting to wonder, do the people that do the hashtags, do they have something against Troyzan?
I mean, I feel like that doesn't go all the way up to props. It could just be like one random editor, you know, it could be the social media person for CBS or the intern, like who knows?
It could be. Do you think that spin and grin will be a thing? Do you think that from now on people go to the immunity challenge? Okay, first things first, spin and grin.
Spin and grin.
No, I already forgot it. It's dead.
Yeah. Why do you have to grin? Like you spin, you're not facing the camera. Who cares if you grin?
Yeah. I feel like we've put a lot more thought into it than Jeff did when he said it.
Spin and grin.
Spin and grin.
I love it. I love it. I hope it catches on. I hope that in Survivor 37, I hope that the survivors have to put together a word scramble. And the word scramble is
spin and grin.
Could we put a bounty out there? Like if any, you know, you have a lot of listeners who want to play. Maybe somebody goes on the next season that's going to film.
Right.
If they could get spin and grin on the air, Rob will throw like a quick, a cool 500 at them.
Well,
I like spending your money. You don't care about money, so it doesn't matter.
Sure. Well, then inevitably, then there'll be some other Survivor podcast that's going to be called Spin and Grin at that point.
Spin and Grin.
Spin and Grin, a Survivor podcast.
Are there like more people left to do Survivor podcasts or would it have to be somebody doing a second one?
There's not enough people left who don't have Survivor podcasts.
Correct.
So yeah, it could be an offshoot. Maybe like somebody breaks up. Like there's like two people go their separate ways.
No, like Dom and he does Spin and Grin and Colin does like, I don't know, Winner's Edit.
Yeah, he'll be on Reinventing the Way the Game is Played podcast.
Not Metamorphosis?
Not Metamorphosis podcast.
Reinventing How This Game is Played!
That's the
really
opening.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yes, that's the opening. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Reinventing How the Game is Played podcast. Here we are, ready to go.
First of all, it doesn't even fit in iTunes. Like, speaking as two people who have like the long, like a very long name podcast that we never say correctly, I think that's even longer.
Reinventing How This Game is Played!
The post-show recap.
Yeah. Was that too much of a stretch for the puzzle?
I like the idea of, you know, a super long puzzle that doesn't take a long time. It's been said like a million times today, but the whole first half of that challenge was kind of pointless, especially with a puzzle that's going to take 50 minutes.
Well, explain for people who don't have a good memory, why was the first part of the challenge so pointless?
Can you explain? Because I was looking at my phone during the first
part. So basically it starts off, it's like an obstacle course and it's like Brad versus Michaela, like heads up through the obstacle course and they both do it pretty quickly. And then the rest of the challenge is then sitting in the chair. So it's not like the whole team needed to do the obstacle course. They just went to then just one person had to do this part of the obstacle course. And it really didn't eat up that much time.
Right. It's like the biathlon if it was like 99% skiing and 1% shooting.
Right. It's almost like, you know, it took them a week to build the obstacle course and then, you know, 10 seconds for, you know, one person from each time to run it.
Listen, there needs to be an obstacle and then a puzzle. Everyone knows that. Can't mix it up.
It would be too boring if it was just people sitting in the chair.
Yeah. I mean, let's get like a spelling bee next week or something.
A spelling bee. You like that?
I'm a little over the challenge in puzzles right now. I don't know about you.
Yeah. So would you feel like the spelling bee would be tense? I mean, they put it on ESPN. That's technically sports.
I think.
Did they fire the spelling bee correspondent, by the way?
They may have. They fired. Now they're just going to have kids reporting.
Yes.
Too soon, Rob. That's too soon.
Too soon. Sorry about that. Okay. All right. So, Keeve, let's go back to your power rankings and let's check back in with Sarah because Sam has a question about her ideal finals opponent. Here is Sam's question.
Hey, Robin Akiva. It's Sam from Scarborough calling about Officer Sarah. I can see now how Sarah is somewhat playing a Tony-esque game, but the difference between each game is that Tony was sitting beside somewhat of a goat of Wu. He won despite the fact that he pretty much flipped on his entire alliance throughout the game. As Sarah is starting to do that now, who does Sarah sit beside at Final Tribal if she were to make it that far and get her the title of Soul Survivor? Love to hear your thoughts. Hashtag keep the jury curse alive.
Okay. Keep the jury curse alive. Yeah.
I mean, that's gonna catch on. Keep the jury curse alive.
Well, we did say that Zeke was the fourth juror if you didn't count that Jessica got voted out from the rock draw.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she technically was on the jury, so it's really a real stretch to say that Zeke was the fourth juror in his season.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, as for the question, like, I mean, we sort of went through this, but you know, probably going to be Troyzan, probably going to, you know, has a good chance against Sierra, probably going to beat Michaela, you know, got a puncher's chance against Brad for sure. Got a good chance against Ty.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's lots of people she could take to the end. Can she get there? I don't know.
I mean, do you see a plan for her? Do you see sort of like the daylight there to the final three?
I mean, ideally it would be boring, but you know, five versus four, you know, who, you know, and then you just have to cut Suri and you're, you know, whichever two of the other three you got a good shot against.
See, the tricky thing for her, though, is that, you know, I liked what she was doing with Zeke and Michaela because her plan to go to Brad and to Troyzan was, hey, let's be a final five. You sort of want to be in the three in the five. So it was like, hey, she was coming to Brad and Troy. And not only did she have good relationships with them, but she also felt like, okay, that she was like in the controlling three with Zeke and with Michaela. Now that plan is definitely rockier to go off with them. Now it's like if Sierra and Brad and Troyzan, now they're in the controlling three potentially with her. And I don't know if Michaela is going to jump away from Suri.
I mean, Sarah has her tentacles in a lot more people than most of the players left. That's a good thing, I guess. Right. The promising, like, offering a final five that, you know, we didn't really talk about Zeke doing that, but like, you know, offering a final five that like other people are in the minority of is probably not the best gameplay.
Right. But if somebody is on the outs, then it's a good thing to offer to them. Right.
They'll say yes. Brad has no reason to say no, but that doesn't, he's going to be looking for a better deal at, you know, right away or right after the next vote.
Right. And so if Sarah can't offer a three with her and Zeke, does she feel like that her ace in the hole is this vote steal where she feels like, okay, I'll go to the final five with Brad and Sierra and Troyzan and Michaela, and then I'll steal, you know, Troyzan's vote and knock him out and then go to the final and then be in the final three. Is that what she's thinking?
I mean, that's her plan A, but she's got three more tribals to get through without having to use it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how she navigates that situation if that's what her plan is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, she has a lot of options. Again, she's got more options than a lot of the players left.
Okay. You like the player with the most options or do you like the player with one solid option?
I mean, ideally you have this, you know, absolutely locked in like Stone Cold Alliance that no one's going up against. But what was the last season? We just had like a total like pagonging and ever, you know, and we saw this. I feel like there's too many wrinkles in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 10 seasons ago. Yeah. 10 seasons ago. So the odds of it happening, you know. No conspiracy here, but the odds of it happening are pretty slow. It's pretty slim.
Pretty slim. Okay. Here's a question from Kelly from Maryland. Wants to know about immunity challenge winners.
Hi, Robin and Kiva. This is Kelly from Maryland. So I've noticed that the only people who have won individual immunity this season are people who won individual immunity in their previous seasons, Andrea, Ty, and Troyzan. All the remaining six people have never won individual immunity. So I'm wondering, who do you think will be the first to buck the trend?
All right, Keeve, are you buying yes. into the curse of people that have only won immunity challenges previously?
So she's saying that people who are good at immunity challenges so far have been winning them again.
Right.
Like, historically, you're good, and then you just do it again.
Right.
Like, you imagine if Ozzy was left. Like, I bet he would also be winning immunity challenges if he was still in the game.
He would, and he did win an immunity challenge in a previous season, so he would be eligible to win
yes.
immunity challenges. But of the people that have not won, who has won? Aubrey didn't win immunity in her season?
Well,
she won challenges.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think she certainly won rewards, and I think she won an advantage, but I don't think she, I guess, technically won immunity.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count? Does that count if you won a reward?
Well, let me give an answer. Someone who didn't make the merge, so hasn't won an individual immunity yet, right? Brad.
Right. Okay, so you think that Brad will win an immunity challenge?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the favorite of everyone left who hasn't won one, right?
Let me see. I'm going to go with the fan favorite, Sierra Dawn Thomas. I think that the sheriff could win one.
Yeah, no, if there's a challenge where being tall is an advantage, obviously, she seems pretty athletic, so she's definitely got a shot.
Okay, so we'll see. Or we'll see if the pattern holds. Will it only be people who won immunity in their first season be the people who will win immunity in this season?
Bated breath. I can't wait to find out.
Okay. Keeve, I have a fashion question for you.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Here's a question from Kelly.
I just have one question. How are Sierra Dawn Thomas's nails still blue?
Keeve.
Yeah.
How could somebody call in this question and expect us to know
insane.
The answer?
This is the craziest thing that's ever happened. 1970 podcasts. That you guys have done. Maybe she has no idea who I am. That's definitely possible.
That's possible.
Like, maybe. And she doesn't know who Rob is, and Rob has a podcast. But, I mean, this is like, I guess we need like a fashion correspondent. I don't know.
Do we need a fashion correspondent?
There? Yeah. Like, do we?
I don't think he knows about nail polish.
I don't think he does either, but he knows more than us for sure.
I don't know. I don't know
anything about nail polish. Like, I couldn't tell you like where my wife's nail polish is, if she wears it or not. Like, I don't know. I'm not really perceptive with stuff like that.
I've never noticed Survivor's nail polish at any point in the game. Is that uncommon for a Survivor to have nail polish on this late in the game?
I mean, she's asking the question, so she probably knows better than us. Should she be our nail correspondent going forward? I feel like Kelly could be, you know, that's her job.
All right, we touched on Aubrey in Ko Rong, and she had a strong connection with Ty back in that season. Here is a question from Jesse from Toronto, who wants to know a little bit more about that relationship. Here is Jesse.
Hey, Rob and Akiva. This is Jesse from Toronto. I have two questions. My first one is about Aubrey and Ty. Why haven't they shown a scene with these guys? Do you think Ty is skeptical of Aubrey now that he's seen how she can manipulate him? They haven't voted together once. So how do you think the relationship is now? Secondly, I couldn't get tickets to your live show next week because it sold out so fast. Will you guys be somewhere afterwards? Or maybe you can make something happen for the sweet voicemail. Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. All right. I'll reach out to Jesse about the Toronto show to see what we can do. We may have
the after party.
We may have some standing room tickets also the night of.
I like that he called up and he gave in a voicemail. We read it. I guess he did us a favor. And so now you owe him like I'm just kidding, Jesse. I hope you get to go to the show.
Okay. We'll see what we can do. Yeah. A lot of hype for the show up in Toronto for.
I'm very sad I'm missing it.
Yeah,
I'm a quarter, you know, Torontonian, so I feel like I belong there, but I'm not going.
You're a quarter from Toronto?
Yeah, my grandfather's from Toronto.
Who knew?
Is that how it works? I've said it like 10 times on the podcast.
Yes.
I guess nobody knew.
How many times on this podcast?
So is there a different, like, is there a different canon in my family on the show and on the other one?
Yes.
On Seinfeld, I play like a character named Akiva Wieneker, but here it's really me, just
yes,
FYI.
That I thought you had said that the person you were playing on the Seinfeld podcast was just a character that was performance art. If your character is ever called into question, that you can't be held accountable for anything you said on that podcast.
Yeah, we just say it's parody. We were joking.
Yes. Okay.
We should really do that on this podcast. There's a lot more listeners. I feel like we'd get into trouble this way more.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying. Okay. So, Keev, the Aubrey and Ty thing, it really is bizarre.
It is, except for the fact that, like, we haven't seen Aubrey with a lot of the remaining people left, right? But I agree. We heard so much pre-gaming about the Korong 4, right? And Aubrey and Ty have a relationship. You know, that's a good call by her that I believe they voted differently 5 different times already in the game. That's a nice little stat. I think before all is said and done, we do get a scene with Aubrey and Ty.
It's so fresh in the minds of the viewers, too, because, I mean, it was only a year ago that we got to see them going out there. I mean, I remember they were on the same call for the exit press a year ago, and I was like, okay, like, so what's the relationship between you guys? And, you know, Ty was like, oh, my God, I love her. I love this woman. And again, they had to know that they were going to go out and play with each other. So you would think that they would have been, I mean, that like, call that they were on together with me was like, you know, literally like 35 days before what we're seeing now in the show. So not to say that that's canon that they were on the call, but at least they're like friendly enough. So it's just interesting that we have not seen any sort of talk of like trying to get something going with the other.
But, you know, you say this a lot also, and I agree with the overall point, but there's only like we have 2 challenges every episode. There's really like a finite amount of space in the show. It's like 20 minutes after commercials, challenges, tribal council, maybe less. And, you know, there's how many scenes are there that, like, you know, if we just made combinations of every player, there's plenty of conversations that we've never seen of the non-remaining people.
Certainly. But that you would imagine that there's nothing fruitful coming from a conversation between Aubrey and Ty.
I mean, it's possible that there's just nothing interesting. Like sometimes we ask these questions like, you know, you asked for a long time, like, how come we haven't seen anything that's from Steven and Spencer? And I think eventually you did, right? But
yeah,
but,
we did.
You know, it took a while. But I, you know, part of it was like, maybe there's just, you know, there's only so much to show and they have to explain the story, try and keep track with like at least 7 of the 9 people left. Like, it's, you know, a lot of things get, if the show was 2 hours long, I'm sure we'd see plenty of conversations between them.
Keeve, we talked about that word puzzle a little bit. Here's a question from Dan from the Bay about some other puzzles they could do.
Hey, Wheels and Rob, it's Dan from the Bay, a.k.a. the Benefactor. In the word scramble in the challenge, they use the 11-letter word reinventing, which clearly caused the players a lot of trouble. But I was wondering just how long of a word could have been formed with those letters, and I think I found some good candidates. For 16 letters, there's lightheartedness, heavyheartedness, and wholeheartedness, which are the quality of being lighthearted, heavyhearted, or wholehearted, all of which we saw at various points in the episode. Or if they really wanted to push it, for 17 letters, there's tridimensionality, which is having 3 dimensions, aka the universe we live in or the depth of Ciri's game. So is this a missed opportunity to really spice up the challenge, or should they have stopped at reinventing? Thanks.
Reinventing how this game is played!
Keeve, what do you think of Dan the Benefactor's 16-letter words?
Yeah, first, we should explain we call him Dan the Benefactor because he donates $1 for every minute we podcast on the Seinfeld podcast over 1 hour each week. So he's given many thousands of dollars to charity. And now this is like our charity back that we answered this strange question of his. First of all, they've never, like, Dan, if they've never heard of the words, like, they can't be in there.
Yeah.
There has to be a word that, like, someone on the tribe would know. I like, we're all impressed that, you know, 17 letter words, but I don't know, like, how they were out there for 50 minutes and there wasn't, like, there were not a lot of SAT words on the table, right? They could have been hours if it was complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Daniel Murphy could go to hell.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's besides the point. Would you play Words with Friends with Dan the Benefactor?
I will challenge him right now. $100 a game.
Whoa. You play?
I don't like doing things without gambling. Like, I don't like competition where it's like I get to the tennis court. Like, I'll pretend like I still do exercise when I used to do exercise. Like, I get to the tennis court and I hit for like 2 seconds. I'm like, all right, we got to start keeping score. I need some action. So I play one game with him for $100. Yeah.
Okay. Why? Are you really good at Words with Friends?
I'm happy to play. I used to be good. I don't have the app on my phone right now, but I will download it and take Dan behind the woodshed.
Okay. All right.
I would probably lose.
Those are fighting words. Okay. Here's another question about the puzzle. This is Jason with an alternative strategy, maybe an emergent strategy.
Hey, Sesternino and Cochran. It's Weatherholtz from Maryland.
We've seen these
puzzles enough now to know that if they go long enough, Probst is going to start giving clues. So, don't you think a good strategy would be to have one person strictly dedicated to listening to every word Jeff Probst is saying, and then taking that and trying to work those words or phrases into the puzzle. It seems like it can't hurt at all, and really will only help you potentially solve that puzzle. What do you guys think of that strategy?
Do you want to pretend to be Cochran to answer this question?
I don't do impressions, but okay. I actually think it's a really good idea. I don't know, like, practically how far away he's standing. A lot of the things we hear him say are, like, dubbed in afterwards also. So, like, I don't know how much, you know, how many clues he's giving now versus afterwards, right? And, again, like, you know, I heard it so much from Zeke today. Like, they were just all so tired. It was day 30. They haven't, you know, they haven't really focused on a lot, but it seems like they don't have a ton of food. You know, he said people like Sierra are basically willing to quit the game at this point. Like, they don't have a lot in the tank. So it's a good idea for, like, and you know, like a fresh-minded person on day one. But day 30, they may have been a little too tired for.
Yeah, I don't think that it's that great of an idea. Because I think that Jeff only starts giving out these types of clues after about, you know, 40, 45 minutes. Where it's, like, obvious.
I think it's when Jeff.
Jeff
gets hot. When he's like, all right, I need lunch. Let's hurry this up. Like, we're not having any more of, like, of the Ian challenges, you know, that are going all night.
Right. I think that the problem.
Season 34.
Yeah, it's like that nobody is moving, everybody's standing there, and that's when he starts giving out clues. But I think 10 minutes in, he's not giving clues.
I wonder if they both sort of like stopped, if he would have been annoyed or if he would have started giving clues. Knowing Jeff, he probably would have been annoyed, but, you know, it's a strategy. I'm not sure.
So I don't know exactly at what point he starts actually giving clues and at what point you're sort of like acting off of like bad information where Jeff is just like saying things like
spinning green.
And you're like, OK, what does that mean? What does that mean? And you're like reading into things that are sort of like red herrings.
The one thing I didn't like in that challenge is when they thought of a word, they should have just like piled those words up so the other tribe couldn't see it. You know what I mean? Instead of like starting to spell it and now it's like a race and they could, I don't know how far away they were. Wasn't clear.
So you would have put a literal person in front of.
No, I would have put. OK, so what's the first word again?
The first word was
reinventing.
Reinventing.
I'm just saying stack the reinventing letters. So like, you know, maybe they could see what letters you have, but they don't see that you've put out the first word.
Right. So you want to like make like a tower to hide them from.
Yes. Make a tower of the letters so they don't see what you're spelling, assuming
but
that they could see other.
I think that how you're working that out is you're moving the letters around. That's like if you say like, OK, put all your Scrabble tiles on top of one another.
Yeah, but you could pick up. I mean, there's ways around it. Right. You pick up a few here, a few on the right, a few on the left. You don't put them in order. You sort of say like, OK, I need an N, I need a V, and then eventually you get there.
So you're saying that after they figured out what the puzzle was going to be.
Yes. Yeah, the first word, at least, like, all right, let's hide that word. And then we'll, you know, we also have like less letter. Maybe we only have 18 letters in front of us now or something. Like we have less options.
Couldn't you have had somebody stand over on like that side to sort of block them with the body?
I guess I would be good at that.
Yeah.
You want like the fat guy to sort of block everybody.
You
that would
be
my job
the best puzzle blocker.
Yes, for sure.
OK. Yeah, that doesn't really come up very much on Survivor.
No, but you always hear it from the players afterwards, like, oh, yeah, they saw our puzzle, or it wasn't totally clear from that one how far away they were. I feel like we're spending a lot of time on this incredibly unimportant thing.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's take this question from Jenny from Ohio. Here is a question from Jenny.
Hi, Rob. It's Jenny from Ohio. I was just wondering what you were thinking about the preview for next week where we see Sierra, Sarah, Troyzan, and Ty all talking together like a possible alliance. That would mean all three idols and both advantages are within one alliance. They might not have the numbers, but I think it'd be interesting to see. I was just wondering what your thoughts on that were. Awesome. Okay, bye.
Keith, can you talk about the preview?
Yeah, we could talk about the preview.
Okay. What do you think of that foursome coming together? Are you buying that?
I mean, just why does she assume it? Because she saw them standing together in the preview?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yes.
I mean, anything's an option. I'm sure like almost the alliances are so fluid at this point. Like, almost anything has been discussed at this point, I'd imagine.
I just can't imagine Brad is out of the picture in that foursome.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I agree. I think it's a random, you know, I'm sure they have a conversation. You saw it, but I don't think it's going to happen. Who are you most excited to see from the family visit?
Okay, well, let's talk family visit in terms of who we've seen before. Well, certainly, I think the headliner has to be Monica Culpepper, no?
I mean, if you're not an HB guy, then the headliner is Monica for sure.
I mean, HB is good. I'm not dogging HB at all. But, I mean, we have a two-time survivor who's going to be potentially coming back for this. And wait until she sees how Brad is doing. I mean, it's going to be like a love fest.
Yeah, no, that's true. I feel like we will be a little... They'll be like, you know, they'll be so gushing like over each other, and I'm just doing it for her, and you'll be excited to see her, but also very sick of it quickly. But I agree. It's cool to have returning players come back as the loved one.
And make Jeremy and Val look like that's old news now, where that Monica and Brad back together.
Yeah. Anybody else you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, let's see. In terms of the people that are in the game, Andrea... I don't remember any of Andrea's family visits. She got voted out before the family visit in Karamoan, and I don't really remember what was going on in Redemption Island at that point.
Yeah, I think she was the first. Was she the last boot before the family visit in Karamoan?
Oh yeah, she was the last one out before.
Then Brenda cries, and then I think she goes home.
Yeah, Sarah didn't make the loved ones visit back in Survivor Cagayan. Aubrey, I don't think they did a loved ones visit in Survivor Koh Rong. Am I right about that? I don't think they did.
I'm a little tired, but I think I don't totally remember. I think you're right. Obviously, Michaela didn't make the merge, so she's not. She has not had a loved one.
Yeah. And Sierra, I don't remember. I know that Mike's mom came out after he won an advantage. I'm not sure if the other loved ones were in the mix. And then Troyzan, did he make the loved ones visit back in Survivor World?
Well, they had one. They definitely had one with Kat and her cousin. Was he still there, though?
Right. I'm not sure. I don't remember. He might have been voted out right before that.
And then, I was too busy looking at Kat and her cousin. I don't remember anybody else
yeah.
there.
Now, I think that Troyzan was supposed to play Survivor Blood versus Water with his brother. So we might get to see a person that may, if it is going to be his brother, that was almost on the show.
Yeah. But like, this was almost like a fake spoiler for me. I was, when we did the greatest winner of all time podcast, like the March Madness in March. And I was asking different players if they wanted to be on our Supreme Court of whatever. It's long to explain.
Right.
You can Google it. And so one of the players I asked, they said, no, like, who else are you asking? And I said, I was going to ask Zeke or Hannah. And they're like, well, they're on the season, so you can't ask them. I'm like, oh, shoot. That's right. Of course. Like, I can't ask them because they know who, like, what if, you know, at the time, what if JT or Sandra or somebody had won? But then I'm like, that's so strange that the person said that Hannah's on the season because she's not. I'm like, no. So the whole season I thought like, oh, she must be Zeke's loved one was it, which would be really funny. Right. They're always like posing for pictures together.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I assumed that he would make it to the loved one's visit because that's like fake, insane spoiler in my head. But it wasn't true.
Yeah. Zeke's dad came for last season's loved one's visit. So I don't think necessarily it would be Hannah coming for this season anyway.
Zeke said in one of the exit interviews that you're not going to believe me because you only believe yours are canon, I guess. But that they let him see his dad, like his dad was on the island. So they let him have a day with his dad. If I read it right, I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah. He had a day with his dad after he got voted out.
Be hard to misinterpret that, right?
What, because he was talking about how his dad came the previous time, and so I don't know. What are you ragging on me for, Rob?
I'm not ragging on you. What did you take away from my exit interview? You paid attention to everybody else's exit interview.
Well, listen, yours, everyone else, you have to read them, so you can't, like, be on your phone while you're reading. With yours, I was focusing just as much with yours. That's actually the last one I did, so it would be freshest in my mind.
Were there any interesting takeaways from my exit interview with Zeke?
Oh, look at this guy. So, interesting. He seems to really like you. That was a takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
He also harped on the same thing that it was tough to, the environment was much tougher around camp than the show lets on, that like it was very awkward to talk to people of the opposite tribe. There were definitely some good stuff in there. I just, I saw four in a row. I don't remember what came from what. I'm sure yours was the best.
I'm not asking you to rate them. I just think like, sometimes
all right, I'll rank the four. Mike Bloom won. You got to give him some love is the first one.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know. Dalton Rossi go fourth, and then you and Josh tie for second.
Okay. All right. Since you're in the business of ranking things today, then here is another thing that somebody wants you to rank. Here is Anthony.
Hello, podcaster Rob and podcaster Akiva. This is listener Anthony calling. Can you guys do a power rankings between Aubrey's left middle finger, Aubrey's right middle finger, and Debbie's middle finger at Tribal Council? Thank you.
Now, why are we podcaster Rob and podcaster Q? Is that like a play on Officer Sarah from listener Anthony?
I think maybe. And he's listener. I think it's Anthony, by the way.
Okay, Anthony. All right. I mean, there is an H in there.
He said Anthony, though.
Okay.
Was he Australian? I'm not sure. I have no idea what his question is talking about. Do you have any clue what he's saying?
I guess Aubrey did a double middle finger last week. I think Debbie gave a middle finger this week.
I got it. Okay. I didn't catch it. I feel like he could have just said that instead of like, you know, assume I'm dumb, Anthony, and ask it like that.
Yeah. Look,
we want us to rank the middle fingers. Well, what's the best middle finger in Survivor history?
I think that that's a great podcast for the summertime. That I feel like that.
Mike Bloom. That is Mike Bloom written all over.
All right.
Over.
Let's get Mike Bloom standing by for that. I think the best.
Put it in Google Calendar. I think. Cass gave a big one, right?
Yeah, I think Andrew Savage also in that season, but I'm sure there are other ones as well. So don't ruin the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, let's not spoil it now.
That's gold. Debbie's middle finger, honestly, I don't really remember. When'd she do it? At Tribal Council?
Was it like right before she said like they're idiots? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only time that she was in the episode, so it must have been at the Tribal Council.
Right, it probably wasn't like during the challenge because she wasn't there.
Right.
Unless he meant last week, I don't know.
So Debbie, I'm wondering, is she coming off as a little bit of a bitter juror? Here's this question from Eric.
Question about Zeke's alliance. This is Eric from Los Angeles. Are they game changers or are they idiots?
So Debbie said game changers or idiots, which I thought was a little salty to say from Debbie.
Well, she said idiots. I think Ozzy said somebody else said game changers. I think it was Ozzy, right?
So first off, are you enjoying salty juror, Debbie?
I mean, you don't get to see much of Debbie. I think like part of that is she wants to get her 2 seconds of screen time, and that's just like her style, like just going to call them idiots. I don't think she really, I do agree she's bitter right now. She's only been out of the game for 2 days, but I think it's more of like she's just saying something to say something.
What do you think about Andrea's alliance? Do you feel like, are they game changers or idiots? It's got, like, I've really been calling this sort of like a no-win situation for Andrea because, yes, it was good to get rid of Zeke. He was planning to come for her, but, like, the chessboard is also not aligned in a great way for her.
I mean, four different players said the same thing. They saw the writing on the wall. Like Michaela said, you know, that you're leaving yourself a 5-4 situation. Any one person can flip. I agree she's not, like, it doesn't hurt to make a move, but I don't know. I hate when like alliances crumble immediately. Like, you know, you have to let it breathe for at least a vote or two. So I would have gone down to 6-3, and then at 6-3 you could boot anybody you want. You could boot Zeke then.
Do you see an alternate move for Andrea and Suri?
I mean, it's not with anyone they could trust. Right? I don't think there's enough people left other than that five who would trust them to pull it off. I think that the best option was try and just stay firm with the six, right?
I always throw this out there and then people laugh, but I mean, is reconciliation totally out of the question? I mean, I asked Zeke about this, but like a real like hat in hand effort, you know, if Andrea goes to Zeke and says, look, we're, you know, this is, I know you're gunning for me. You know, I could go after you at this vote. We need to stick together. Could we get this thing back on the right page, or am I just being super naive?
Yeah, so again, in a different exit interview, I think in every one but yours, Zeke said that he was really disappointed with Andrea that after the Varner incident, she did not come over to him and say, how are you doing every day? Or it seemed like at all. And to him, he thought like they have a relationship. Again, they played Survivor Brooklyn together outside the game, so they knew each other. I'm not sure if other people know that they know each other. I have no idea. But they had this relationship. He, you know, from a person-to-person standpoint, Zeke was saying he was disappointed. Not that he thought Andrew was a good person, just that he wasn't on her mind as like if she really wanted to work with him, she would be asking him how he's doing. And she really wasn't, which led him to think that they're not working together at all. So I think that's really the answer to your question. There was no chance for reconciliation. I think he likes Andrea and he said they're friends now. So I think he was actually being nice, but he sounded actually a little disappointed in her.
Yeah. I just think that the idea of like mending fences, like we're so quick to go after each other on Survivor. I just wonder if that would be an effective strategy of trying to like instead of as soon as you find that out that somebody is going for you, target them immediately, which is sort of like the conventional wisdom. Could you potentially try to just mend these fences with people that you have disagreements with? Or is it just, you know, I'm just like living in some sort of like utopia and not where they had bees and all sorts of
we get the song?
Preppers. Yeah. No, I don't have it right here. Do you want it?
No, it's fine.
No.
I just think that it was too far. First of all, like, for one vote, I could see them working together. But Andrea and Zeke are power players in the game. They're both viewed as, like, in the upper echelon of, like, more dangerous players left. So I don't think that either of them really ever wanted to take the other person to the end. So at a certain point, this was always going to end poorly.
It's a shame. It's a shame because you would love to have seen them. You know, they had this secret in their back pocket.
I mean, how weird would that have been, right? Like, they played a fake. By the way, I was thinking, like, you know, you watch the show. You were on the show. But, I'm just a fan who's been watching since season one. And you think of these people as like, oh, they're kind of pretty cool. Like, Andrea's, you know, she's a People magazine reporter. And Zeke is this, like, super smart dude who went to Harvard. And then, like, they're playing Survivor Brooklyn the Park. I'm like, oh, they're, like, nerds just like us. Like, they're huge dorks. And Zeke said in the exit interview, like, we also played Survivor Big Brother Brooklyn in my apartment.
I'm like, Survivor Big, like, Brother Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that. Do you ever have any, I mean, do you ever have any desire to, like, play one of these fake Survivors or, like, make a fake Survivor season?
I would. I feel like that would be fun to just do it for a day and I wouldn't have to suffer or, like,
yeah, like a one day thing, like, yeah, Survivor Brooklyn.
If it was like somebody was like, I know Zeke has also said, like, he's done, like, Big Brother games in, like, an apartment or something like that. I would definitely be up for something like that. And Big Brother is less running around, Keith.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I'm in favor of that.
I would definitely be up for something like that.
All right, let's do it.
Let me play you this question about Brad Culpepper, if he might be happy at this point in the game.
Hey, Rob. I was wondering if you think Brad is a little bit happy. I think a wise survivor once talked about how 4 into 9 equals in. And that seems to be the position he's in. So I guess that he's right where he wants to be. All right. Bye.
Yeah. Brad right now is in a tribe of 9 and he's in a 4. 4 into 9 is out right now. Could he get it to a 5 into 9 so he could be in?
He definitely could. I like that catch. I didn't see anybody else catch that on Twitter yesterday. But can I give you some Brad fan fiction?
Hold on. Let me just set this up. Okay.
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
So Brad is getting this great edit. I think that's, you know, compared to the villain edit he got in Blood versus Water, I think it's inarguable, right, that Brad is getting a really positive edit so far.
Absolutely.
So now my question is, thinking he's not going to win, which I firmly think he will not win for reasons we've already argued about, what if he's pulling, like, a Colby at the end and he's like,
we're rich and I'll, like, get some good, he won't say this, but, like, I'll get some good publicity for doing this, but vote for and, like, pick whichever person, you know, Sierra or Troy, and whoever he likes better in the final three. And he, like, throws the finals. And that's why he's getting hero edit, even though he doesn't win.
So you think that he will do a half Murphy from the final three? You think that he will say everybody should vote for this one person? Boy, that would be interesting.
Yeah, why else is he getting a positive edit? I mean, he seems like a cool guy, but if he's not, I mean, listen, if he's winning, we know he's getting a positive edit.
And yet Jeff seems to really have a man crush on him. But, like, why is it, you know, we don't normally see the second place person getting this positive of an edit. We haven't seen him do anything negative. The Zeke-Brad conversation, even though Andrea took umbrage to it, was really from Zeke's point of view, right? It wasn't from Brad's. Like, he didn't do anything wrong there.
I just feel like you're making a lot of assumptions.
I'm making like 1,000 assumptions. I'm just
really
entertaining myself.
I agree with that people won't vote for Brad Culpepper because he has money.
Okay.
I mean, I honestly don't know. I know Brad's a lawyer and I know he played in the NFL, but I mean, he wasn't like making like superstar money in the
NFL.
No,
yeah, I think his money is from being a lawyer. I think he's a really, really successful lawyer. I think the NFL, you're right. He's probably making 100, 200 grand that, you know, was going a lot of different ways. But I think he's an extremely successful lawyer. People were saying he's got like the biggest house in Tampa Bay and all these things. I think you're vastly underrating how rich he is.
It's certainly possible, but I don't know if
everyone who finishes playing with him says he keeps talking. Not only is he wealthy, he keeps talking about how wealthy he is, which was also a complaint against him on Blood vs. Water that he's a great storyteller, right? But he just talks about the old days with football. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just talking with
the Calebs and the Haydens.
Not really.
No.
No, I mean, I feel like I may guess he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He was a Gator, right? I'm not buying.
Okay.
He was a Jet. He would for sure have my jury vote.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. But I just reject the premise. People aren't going to vote for him because of the money.
Yeah, it's
maybe
absurd.
Right.
I agree.
I will give you all.
Let me be on the record. Nobody's going to be like 3 weeks from now, like, oh, that was so stupid, Akiva. But if I'm right, people will be like, holy crap. And they'll tweet at me.
All we've heard about this season is how great his social game is. And everybody does seem to be really high on Brad. I know you're saying that some people in exit interviews are talking about how much money he has, but it has not been a thing on the show. So,
right. OK.
I don't
but
know.
That's not the type of thing that would ever be on the show.
No, that's definitely been on the show. That you've had lots
it's
of people.
It's usually
going
the
back
opposite.
To-
it's usually, you know, like a woo or somebody saying, like, I could really use the cash, or like everyone in the Dirty 30 who have a combined zero jobs, like that they need the money.
Well, you've definitely had in situations going back to Survivor Africa where Carl the
Fiji.
Dentist was talking about he had like a Ferrari or a Lamborghini mm-hmm. or something like that. And Jimmy Johnson was talking about how, you know, that, you know, nobody will vote for me because I have the money. And Cliff Robinson also, there was talk about
right.
like, oh, no, nobody would vote for him because he has money. So I definitely think that that's been talked about before on Survivor where somebody is well off.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea of like lying and saying you're rich? Like, hey, I have like $100 million. Take me to the end and telling everyone about it. Like everyone will beat me. And then getting there and being like, actually, I'm poor. How do you think that would play?
So you think that that's what Russell should have done is at the final tribal council, tell people that he
would tell the truth. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Probably.
Okay.
Probably shouldn't have bragged about how much money he doesn't actually. Don't yeah. kill me, Russ.
Keeve, let's keep talking about your boy, Brad. Here's a question from John.
Hey, Robin and Akiva. This is John in Tucson. So, Keeve, do you think Brad Culpepper has established himself as the greatest former pro football player at Survivor? Or does Gary Hogaboom still have that spot on lock? One step further, who is the greatest Survivor player slash former pro athlete?
Keeve, this is interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So, let's...
I think, actually, the first time we ever spoke was you had this conversation on a podcast like 4 years ago, and we started tweeting each other, and it was love at first sight.
Really? Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was... We came full circle. We're done. This is it. This is the end of our relationship.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's been nice.
160
you.
Seinfelds later. Yeah, this is
yes.
great. I feel like it's a nice. This Damon Lindelof could learn from us here.
Okay.
So the answer to his second question is Jeff Kent. Jeff Kent gets votes for the Hall of Fame. He's probably not a Hall of Famer, but he's a borderline Hall of Famer. He was a great baseball player. He's clearly number one, and then number two, Cliff
Robinson.
Well, hold on. Yeah.
Let me ask, does Jimmy Johnson count in...
Right, okay.
Is Jimmy Johnson more prolific in coaching than Jeff Kent was as a second baseman?
Yeah, so if you're including a coach, and obviously it's you know, you're comparing apples to oranges, it's pretty silly. But in terms of, like, overall sport, first of all, Jimmy Johnson barely played Survivor. Let's be fair.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, like, you know, he wins two Super Bowls, wins a national title. He is definitely, he would be number one if you're counting coaching versus playing. He'd be a little bit above Jeff Kent, and I'd have Kent two, and then definitely Cliff Robinson is like a couple years ago when he played, we were talking about this and I checked, he was like sixth all time in NBA history in minutes played or something insane like that.
Okay.
Like
now,
he was always a role player, but he played a lot.
Now you're talking about players and you talk about coaches. What about the impact of two-time World Series champion Florida Marlin owner David Sampson?
Oh, soon to not be Florida Marlins owner.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know. But yeah, we don't know who's going to own the team. I think that Jeb
right.
and Jeter are going to get screwed.
Right. We'll see if the lawyers screw up that deal. They might. David Sampson, like, what is his resume? Like, he fleeced the taxpayers of Florida for stadium and then bragged about it. They did win a World Series, but I don't think, like, he drafted. Oh, they were getting really inside baseball, literally, here with, like,
yeah.
I don't think he drafted Miguel Cabrera. No one, I mean, like, people could just tweet at me if they wonder this question. Yeah, Sampson, like, in terms of importance, he's up there. Culpepper
okay.
was a very solid player. He's there. There's a couple players that weren't great, like Grant. Hogaboom was a backup. Like, Hogaboom was somewhat renowned because he was, you know, he played for the Cowboys, a famous team, but, like, he wasn't some superstar player. Is there anybody? Oh, you know, we're ditching Crystal Cox, who, if you count her gold medal, right, the way that the person before still is, like, Troy Zinn is still a Lance Armstrong guy. If you're pro steroids, like we are in the 32 Fans podcast, then the Crystal Cox winning a gold medal in the Olympics is pretty up there, right? That probably beats Cliff Robinson.
Right. And Keeve, you're also forgetting Steve Wright, former offensive lineman.
Yeah, just an okay player. He's behind these guys, Culpepper and all those. I mean, like, what about Sierra as a barrel racer? Is that a pro athlete?
No,
you're definitely
no,
not a pro.
No, no,
like,
okay.
She's not paying the.
All right, so let's just go like only NFL. Brad Culpepper okay. is now at the top of the NFL power rankings.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to, I'd really need to look at the stats, but
yeah,
I think Culpepper would be one. I just don't know how long Grant played, but maybe you'd put a quarterback over Grant and then.
Yeah.
He didn't play a lot. So definitely Hogaboom over Grant and then Wright. And then is there anybody else who played?
I would say I would go Hogaboom too. I think Grant Matos, I think that, Boston Rob kind of carried him. I know that, people say that he could have won that
carried
season.
Carried him in the NFL. We're talking about NFL only here. We're not talking about
I thought we're talking about the NFL players on Survivor. You're talking about most famous NFL players that were.
No, we're talking about, I thought he was asking me the best. He asked me for the best NFL players on Survivor. Or maybe he was asking me for best survivors, which would be a much. Question would make much more sense, and that's a little late here, and I sort of messed it up, but I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't make sense why he'd ask who the best football players were.
Right. In order to rank
again, I'm
dumb.
Like, why, you should, be more, elaborate a little better because,
yeah.
So in terms of best football playing, well, Jimmy Johnson has to be last, right? He stinks at Survivor. Right. So, okay. So I didn't understand why you're talking about Grant Terry Boston Rob.
Let's listen to the question again.
But we're always on the wrong page.
Hey, Robin and Kiva. This is John in Tucson. So, Keeve, do you think Brad Culpepper has established himself as the greatest former pro football player at Survivor? Or does Gary Hogaboom still have that spot on lock? One step further, who is the greatest Survivor player / former pro athlete?
Okay. Mm. All right. Okay, so
you were right, and I was wrong.
Yes, but I was wrong for bringing Jimmy Johnson even into this conversation.
Sure. Yeah, you messed me up. Totally.
Okay. So then, and then Steve Wright would be four.
Yes.
But it's interesting that all of them are all people that have made the merge now after Brad has now, in his second go around, come back and done well.
Yeah. But if you're just doing all athletes, like Jeff Kent was pretty decent. I would like to see Kent play a second time.
Yeah. John Rocker flamed out.
Right.
In both Survivor
and
baseball.
Was a college baseball player.
Right.
He played with Ike Davis and Jason Kipnis, but he never made the majors.
Who was that?
Hayden Moss was a college baseball
player. Okay. So, yeah, I think that's probably best overall athlete. Yeah, I think I'll give it to Brad at this point. Brad 2.0.
Right. Fair enough.
Good for him. All right, Keith, before we get to the next call, let me just take a moment and thank a sponsor, and those are friends over at canvaspeople.com. Now, Kiva, I know that you are probably right now, we interrupted you searching for gifts for your wife for Mother's Day.
When is Mother's Day?
It's May 14th, which is going to be next Sunday coming up. And canvaspeople.com has you covered because they've got a great offer where you can get up to an 11 by 14 canvas photo, normally $69.99 plus shipping. You will get that for $0. Just pay the shipping. Wow. How about that?
That's really good. Especially we're both on the record. Both our wives spend a lot of time making picture albums. So I feel like they could take their favorite pictures from the album and blow them up. That's actually pretty useful.
It's a great gift because first, it's not going to cost you that much. It's $0 for the picture. And then the shipping comes out to like $18.95. So it's less than $20 altogether. And you know what, Keith? It's easy and it screams thoughtful.
Can it hide the date that like make it seem like I got it like weeks ago?
Yeah, of course you could. I mean, why would it have the date on it?
I don't know. Do you have like separate credit cards from your wife? I don't know. We got to figure out how
this
works.
Look, I can't help you
can
with
the
banking.
Put it on your account and then like you could put on mine and then we'll sort of we got this back in March.
We can work that out at some point, but okay. So check out this offer. Get that 11 by 14 canvas photo from canvaspeople.com. They turn your favorite pictures into a beautiful artwork that you can hang up anywhere. It's great for the home or the office. And it doesn't just have to be for a mom for Mother's Day. Check that out. This offer sounds too good to be true, but you can buy with confidence. They have over 1 million satisfied customers. To get this special offer, go to canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, select the 11 by 14 size, and enter the promo code RHAP in the promo code box to get that special $0 pricing. That's canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP. Keith, let's take this question from Jenny about Michaela. Michaela.
Hey, Rob and Akiva. It's Jenny from Canada. I wanted to ask you about Michaela crying as Zeke gets voted out. Rob, on Know It Alls, you brought up how weird that was, given that we have never really been shown a narrative of Zeke and Michaela being close. In Zeke's exit interview with Josh Wigler, he actually says he was confused by it and always thought Michaela didn't really like him. So I'm wondering, what do we think happened here? Is Michaela just bad at expressing her feelings and truly loved Zeke and felt terrible? Is it remotely possible this was a game move to soften her image after so many sassy and snack-filled tribal appearances? Is there something else we might be missing here when it comes to Michaela? Love to hear any thoughts and theories. Thanks, and see you next week in Toronto.
Okay. All right, Keeve, I know you said you read everything that Zeke had to say today.
Yes.
What did Zeke make of all of these Michaela crying questions?
And again, this is coming from Zeke. You know, we'll hear more from Michaela, you know, sometime in the next 3 weeks. But he thought that she felt bad for him, kind of, that he was voted out. Like, she maybe there was a little bit of regret that they didn't play together. It wasn't totally clear to me. I did see it, but I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it was more of I like him. Maybe like he had a tough time in the game. I feel super bad that we couldn't work together. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
How come all these people did it? You know, everyone's mentioning Wiggler's exit interview, not yours.
Well, Josh does such a good job with his, and he writes it so quickly. I mean, if I had to turn my interviews into an article, it would go up like on Sunday.
You must be a fast typist.
Yes. Very talented. One of his many talents. Now, Michaela did respond on Twitter. And she must have got this question a lot because she tweeted, imagine you're frustrated, lonely, misunderstood, and only have two friends in life. Then you stab one in the back. That's why I cried.
So the answer makes sense, except for the fact that we did not see them be friends. They voted, you know, she voted against him to vote him out. Like, so I guess the idea is like she feels bad about it, but. You know, like she's regretting it after it's happened. But the idea that they're friends, like we said, it was never really clear on the show.
Okay. Well, Keeve, you know, there's a lot of things we don't see in the episode. We don't see everything that happens.
Yeah, but no, I think if it happens off screen, it's not canon. Even in Seinfeld, we have a strict rule. If something happens off screen, it never happened.
It never happened. Okay. Speaking of Seinfeld, here's a Seinfeld question for you from Carson.
Hey, Robin Wheels. It's Carson from Antelope. Since I've been watching Seinfeld for the first time while listening to your guys' podcasts through the last few months, I was just wondering, which one of the Survivor Game Changers would be best in Seinfeld as a guest star? Just wondering. I'd probably pick Debbie. All right, thanks.
All right. So, Keeve, we're going to be coming up on a Survivor guest star coming up in a Seinfeld episode in these next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, Penner. We're going to see Penner very soon.
Okay. All right. So, in the meantime, which of these Survivor game changers would be best in the Seinfeld universe?
I mean, Debbie is like the most sitcom-y character, but she's not still in the game. Does she count?
See, I think that you would want to have a character that not like they're so big where they have like a character where there's just like there's something, one thing that's like weird about them.
Right. I mean, no, there are characters, you know, like Jimmy has many things that are weird about him. But I agree. Like if you're just having some sort of side thing, it's just like the low talker or the, you know, man hands or something.
Right.
So then who would that be?
I'm trying to think.
What if it's Aubrey and she just gives everyone the finger and that's her thing? She loves giving people the finger.
She's a big finger giver or she's always eating coleslaw coleslaw at odd times.
Yeah, that would be good too. Like I love her, you know, she's great, but just too much coleslaw. I don't know. What's the deal with the coleslaw?
Right. Jerry goes out on a date with her and she orders like pasta with coleslaw.
Right. That's not bad. I feel like we could workshop that and maybe improve it. But yeah, that's not bad. Sari, Michaela, who else is there? Andrea's, you know, she doesn't have like one really wacky thing. So yeah, I think Aubrey's good.
Okay. So Aubrey coming to a Seinfeld episode soon. All right. And then I have another Seinfeld question for you from Matt Price.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Keeve. This is Matt Price in D.C. I know that one of Keeve's favorite Seinfeld episodes is The Opposite, which, of course, is where George tries doing the opposite of his normal instincts in every day of his life, and he has unprecedented success by doing that. So what survivor should be doing the opposite? Also, are there any survivors that we should just sort of yada yada through the rest of the season? Love to know your thoughts. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Keeve, this is fascinating.
We knew that was coming.
Yes.
We knew the yada yada was coming. People have done that before.
Yes. All right. Do the opposite. Who should be doing the opposite?
It's a really good question, right? I mean, I'd
it's
say
a great
like
question.
Not Brad. He's doing well.
No.
Not Sari. Not Sarah. I mean, not like Sierra. I don't know if she's super capable of like doing the opposite. This is her game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with I mean, you could say Troy's in, but like he's not a target and he's the final nine. So I'm going to say Michaela.
Are we able to choose people that are not in the game anymore?
Like from different seasons?
No,
like how far back are we
season,
going?
From this season,
people?
But are already voted out.
Oh, sure. I mean, that would, you know, I'm sure someone who was voted out first or second or third would
right.
be a better answer than.
Because to me, I feel like the person that needs to adopt the opposite strategy is Tony.
It's the correct answer, but he was so far off. It's like expecting like your baby to start just like being toilet trained when they're 6 months. Like he wasn't even close this season. Like if he played 100 times, he's first or second boot all 100 times the way he came in.
It's like, okay, I'm going to go build a spy bunker. I'm like, no, okay, I'm going to do the opposite of building a spy bunker.
Right.
And what's that?
Right.
What's that? Is that like
ruin
sitting
a,
on top of the shelter?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tony's the right answer. Like, he definitely played the worst of anyone this season. I mean.
But if he did the opposite.
We're just talking like in-game gameplay because, you know, there's an obvious other answer too. But I think, yeah, Tony was a disaster and he should do the opposite.
Did Sarah Lucina try to do the opposite strategy this season where she's like, last season I played like a cop. This season I'm playing like a criminal. That's the opposite
yeah.
of a cop.
Yeah, she keeps saying that, but I don't know if her style is really any different. She says that, but it's just like a nice quote for TV. The interesting thing about Sarah and Tony, like you go back and watch Kagyan, so much of it at the beginning of the season is told from Sarah's perspective and not Tony's, right?
Yeah, she was looking good
and
in the first couple episodes.
She was such a major character. So good. She was like the favorite at, you know, basically until the merge. But yeah, no, she's playing similar. I agree. Tony, that's the answer.
Okay. All right. And then I have one other question for you, Keeve. This is from Andrew Kirk has a question for Keeve.
Hey, Robin and Keeva. This is Andrew Kirk calling from California. My question for Keeva is, if you were to cast a 8 to 16 person Survivor season using WWE superstars, who would be on the cast? Love to give you guys thoughts on that. Thanks.
Keeve, do you have a WWE superstar or two that you feel like would fit right in with the Survivors?
Yeah, I was not expecting that. I thought we'd get a third Seinfeld question and we've done that a bunch of times, right? We did that with Seinfeld. We did that with NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah. Who won our NFL quarterback draft season? Joe Flacco?
Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco. He's elite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still getting like hate mail about Drew Brees not being cast.
Remember when Brock Osweiler was on that season?
Was he on that season?
I think he was.
Oh, because we wanted the tall jokes in there, maybe?
I think it was like during like the 7 weeks that he was like filling in for Peyton Manning.
Good. I think that podcast holds up. I feel like it was. Who would be good? Now we're really like alienating 99.5% of the ones. Dolph Ziggler would be interesting.
Okay.
Like current WWE stars. This is good. Enzo would probably be like the most interesting character ever.
Okay. I mean, I don't know who any of these people are, but sure.
You know what? One of my biggest like issues with casting tropes, like in any group of friends, especially group of guy friends, like the most popular guy a lot of times is like the jolly, like slightly overweight, you know, guy who like cracks jokes, is pretty non-threatening. And those people are never on Survivor Big Brother. Like, you know, everyone's like favorite people are you know, like the fat guy who's like, you know, who's self-deprecating
right.
and. You
right.
never see those people on Survivor. Like,
no, this
or,
is a great point. And I would love to see this, and I feel like we haven't really done it, but we need like the Hurley on Survivor.
Totally. The truth is, and the reason I'm saying that, by the way, is because there's a guy, Kevin Owens. He's not that fat. Obviously, he's an amazing athlete, but you're just thinking of like a snarky guy who would be amazing. Although he's Canadian, he's not eligible.
Right.
Robin's like half, like 80% of WWE is not American. Hurley would be great. I think Survivor wouldn't cast someone that out of shape necessarily.
Why?
But
they couldn't
Big Brother,
have one person that was out of shape?
They could, but they don't. They don't really cast that sort. Like, there hasn't been a fat guy on any season I can really think of. But I think Big Brother, that's perfect. They would absolutely own the house.
Cornbread.
Like the jolly.
No,
like,
no, he was voted out first.
Well, he wasn't. Was he that fat? First of all, I don't. Big Brother OTT is not canon.
Don't
he's from
fat
Big Brother
shame
OTT,
Cornbread,
right?
Akiva.
I don't know what he looks like. I never saw Big Brother OTT. I just know that that's a name I don't know. Is it? Unless he's from Canada.
He's not
but yeah,
from
no,
Canada.
If there's any casting people on there, get on that. The jolly fat guy will be your most popular person next season.
Yeah, it'll be a breakout star. Okay. All right, Keeve, are you ready to get into the Survivor social media segment?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, take it away, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They like to changing the game with at Zeke or Chief. Tweets.
Yeah, changing the game like Zeke or Chief. That's his Twitter handle.
Yeah.
All right, Alex Kidwell has compiled all of the Survivor social media, and he starts off with, he sends Aubrey Bracco tweeted, "I love an egg." She was very excited about the egg, not coleslaw this week.
Yeah, people are really grasping to any straw they can with Aubrey. I like Aubrey as much as the next person, but I know for the, you know, the super duper Aubrey fans, they're really grasping for straws.
They're trying to make coleslaw into a thing, Keeve.
I thought you were going to say like something terrible, like make coleslaw out of lemonade or something terrible. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Troy Zan, he had a couple of interesting tweets from last night. At Troy underscore Zan, he says, "No one knows, but I just tore my ACL in half on that challenge. Hashtag not saying anything. I won't quit. Hashtag Survivor Game Changers." Keeve, torn ACL for Troy Zan.
I mean, we've seen it before with players at the very least claiming that they have an ACL tear, right? Jeff Kent, I think, said he tore his ACL, like literally getting, you know, during a marooning on day one.
Right.
You know, we've had serious injuries. Who got really badly hurt and stayed in the game? Missy. But I always think, like, show me the MRI or whatever you do for an ACL. Like, I'll believe, you know, let's see him the next few weeks. I'll believe him when I see it, that it's fully torn.
Is Troy Zan like a Noah Syndergaard? Is he refusing the MRI?
I mean, it's possible. It's so late in the game. You just stick around for 9 days. It's not like your ACL is going to fall off if you don't treat it for 9 days.
Right. How come, Keeve, all of these survivors can play through any ACL injury, but any Met that even bumps their ACL, done for the year?
I mean, I feel like if Ray Ramirez was a survivor, then there would be like three people left by day five. Like,
could we get the survivor doctor working for the Mets?
That would be good. We switch doctors. I feel like Survivor would be canceled, but the Mets would win the World Series.
Right. Why is Cespedes out for how many months?
Yeah, he's no Troy Zan. Troy Zan just sucked it up and kept playing. Again, listen.
Rub
Troy
some
Zan,
dirt
post
on
the,
it.
Post your MRI or whatever you get. I want to see it. I don't buy it.
Yeah. Okay. And he also says, you know when you pop apart a chicken wing like that, hurt like a MF-er? Sounds painful.
What a humble brag by Troy Zan.
Okay. And then Troy Zan also was not thrilled about the edit. He said, "Invisible again tonight, folks. Makes me laugh, but I'm still on the island, you sons of a bitch." Ha ha.
It must be weird, like, watching the show. And you know how well you did, but you have no idea if you're going to be, like, the focal point. I mean, you could guess if you're, like, super involved or you're not. But, like, the Troy Zan, there's no way on earth that he, even if he's like the next boot next week and it's like, a you know, an idol and he's sort of like under the radar, there's no way on earth he thought that he was going to have 9 confessionals in 11 episodes like this.
Right. I mean, it's really frustrating.
He's probably having parties at his house with his ACL, you know, all repaired and people are coming over and then he's just literally not in the episode. I actually feel bad.
Yeah. I mean, I've had it both ways where in Survivor the Amazon, like I had the most, still to this day, the most confessionals, like
what a sick brag by this guy.
It's up there. It's like, you know, one of the, if you look,
I think it's first or second. I think Boston Rob in Redemption Island may have topped it, but it's definitely top two.
Right. And then I have a season where it sucks because you were there. It's like I was out. It's like you suffer. You were out there in the rain. You were out there in these terrible conditions. You were still starving. And it's like, okay, well, at least this is going to be on TV one day. And then it's also that part sucks when then you did those things and then you just sit there and it's like, oh, I'm not going to be in this.
Let me ask you a question. Especially with your second season, for the few episodes you were in, did you think like, oh, shoot, I had such a great line in a confessional. I can't believe they didn't use that.
No, I didn't really remember anything. You know, and again, I think that unless it's like the jerk store called and they're running out of you, you don't really have that many things that you remember were like great, great, you know, that was the best line ever.
Right. But no, you had some great one-liners your first season. So I don't know if you were like sitting watching like, oh, man, I hope that makes air.
Right. I think I just threw everything at the wall in both seasons. And
so you're just doing like a 1-hour set every time a producer called you over.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's kind of like what I was doing. And again, there was more fodder the first time around. There was a lot more crazy stuff going on than what I had to talk about the second time around, too.
Right. I think you're like third all time. Russell has number one with 108.
Yeah. So it's up there.
By the way, speaking of Troy Zan, Rob Sesternino on All Stars had more confessionals than Troy Zan did. I think as many, you know, before this episode, more than Andrea, Aubrey, a lot of people. It's not like you were so invisible.
Yeah. I think that, in my boot episode and then the first episode, I think I had a fair amount. And then it's like the middle two, I didn't really have that many. All right. Caleb Reynolds said, at Caleb Reynolds, life is what you make of it. Don't blame others for your failures. Is he throwing shade at somebody? Is that a Survivor related
sure.
tweet?
Is he still watching Survivor? Like, I'm actually surprised to hear his name. What was it, what you called it when on Evolution of Strategy when you guys would have like a player that you forgot existed?
Yeah. Oh, so you think he's the golden boy this season?
He might be. Like Caleb who? Like, oh, Caleb from Big Brother played twice? That's so strange.
Right. Is there at least a key for this season?
I mean, not really. Like, at least, really. You know, because it's I mean, like, Troy Zan is the guy who's been there the whole time and, you know, right. and didn't get anything going. I guess Sierra, right. like just because she's the first boot.
No, but it can't like, be the first boot. You can't say the first
you're right,
boot.
You're right. You're right. And it's like, listen, so if you want a woman, the next one's Sandra. That's absurd. Haley is, you know, pretty memorable. Debbie. No. So you're done. Then there's no.
It'd probably be Haley.
If you had to pick one. But I feel like you won't feel like Haley was, you know, she's on the jury. You keep seeing her. She was definitely a part of the season.
Brett LaBelle, who's going to be up in Toronto with us next week. He said rewards are great because booze while playing Survivor is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever drink when you were on Survivor? You did.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I can't complain.
I don't think I drink. I feel like I'd be too worried about it messing with my stomach. I mean, if there was a ton of food, then fine. But if it was just like alcohol or a snack, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah. The worst part of drinking on Survivor was the hangover. I mean, that was really like being dehydrated.
Is it the day before like a challenge or is it like you kind of have an off day? So it's a big difference.
Right. That I drank at the Merge Feast and a couple other times, but also the night of the Merge. But like, you know, I don't think I did any drinking like heading into a challenge.
It would be funny if someone was ever like too hungover to perform in a challenge. It was just like lying on the side moaning. Yeah.
You know, Big Tom, I think, was got really drunk going into a challenge back. Or yeah. I think he was sitting out of the challenge, I think, back in the All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, hashtag Figgy. Has still been tweeting Survivor. She's still watching. She says, we're all thinking it. I'm just saying it. Debbie is goals.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking. She's goals.
In what way is Debbie goals?
Is goals AF and goals, are they two different things?
I don't know. I think that's different than goals AF.
I'm not sure. I'm like a borderline millennial. I don't really know the language.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie's goals.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if she wants to have, like, 20 different jobs, Figgy, then Debbie's definitely goals.
Also, Rupert Bot, the real Rupert is, like, MIA right now. He's not tweeting anything. But Rupert Bot, I think he might be malfunctioning at this point in time. Because he's tweeting some things that really don't make any sense. He says, you can trust a Dr. Culpepper.
Yeah. No, that was Rupert's tweet, not Rupert Bot.
No, that's a real Rupert Bot tweet.
Okay.
I responded to him last night as a, like, look, you're drunk. Go home, Rupert Bot. You're too out of control. This is something Rupert Bot tweeted last night that I noticed. Rupert Bot tweeted, Zeke Danber, they're gonna a lot of poor Camp Seal ID as when they get a referm that I am like Pyor that I did that side of.
Mm. Yeah, I think like it went from like bad to good and now it's malfunctioning again.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even English now. And now it's just like tweeting like random characters. Like, I think that the Rupert Bot could be drinking during Survivor.
That's possible. It could be like Tom. He might be drunk.
Right. He's going to like some crazy Survivor viewing parties that are lit at Rupert Bot's house.
AF.
Yes. Lit AF. All right. Keev, great job. Was there anything we didn't cover today?
No, I think we got everything. We did a lot of rankings.
What's the hashtag for today? Do you have anything?
No, I never. I always rely on you for this. And okay. Like most stuff we do.
I think the hashtag has got to be for this episode. I think it's the new Survivor catchphrase.
Spinning grin.
Hashtag spinning grin.
Spinning grin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
But that has to be the last time, you know. I wonder how many people actually hashtagged it going in, you know, after the episode last night.
All right, we'll see how many people are on Spin and Grin. I mean, it's going to be a huge hashtag once Spin and Grin podcast takes off next year.
That's right. We also do these hashtags, but I feel like we got to do more t-shirts.
Okay, what kind of t-shirts?
I mean, listen, we're going to be done with the Seinfeld podcast. We need like a new, you know, way to make some income once that's done. And ultimately, podcasts are just like a mechanism to be able to sell merch from. That's what I heard.
Yeah, so why? We so need what, to like, what kind of shirt do you want to get?
I don't know, like a Spinning Grin shirt or something. Like you need super inside jokes that no one else will get, that people like forget 2 weeks later. But the shirt's like $29.99.
All right, well, we'll see what we can do for the Spin and Grin t-shirt. All right, great stuff. Of course, you could follow Akiva on Twitter. Over 1,000 followers now for Akiva. How about that?
Yeah, what a brag.
Okay, what's the next goal for you? What's the next goals AF?
I feel like I hit 1,000. I don't know. Twitter's, we've discussed this, but Twitter's dying in like 6 months. So let's get on some other site and get some followers.
Yeah, I've been meaning to ask you that on your Twitter page, there's a picture of a clown holding a baby. Are mm-hmm. you the baby? Are you the clown?
No, I'm not the clown. What's going on there? Because the picture's clearly from like the 80s.
Yeah.
I think my grandfather was a camp director and he dressed up as a clown. And I'm like the fat baby who's petrified of him. Like you, I was afraid of, I mean, you're still afraid of clowns, right? But I was afraid when I was a little kid.
Yes. So that is a terrifying image. It's almost like a still from like a Stephen King's It.
No, I know. That's why I'd never seen the picture before. But, you know, I came across it. My parents have these old albums and I'm like, oh, that's perfect. Thanks for calling my grandfather terrifying.
Oh, it's beyond terrifying.
Okay. Well, he's been gone for like a long time.
I'm sorry. Sorry to hear that. But again, you know, that's a really, I'm not a clown guy.
I know you're not. All right. Should I change my background on like the Twitter? How often are you on my page that you see it?
I like to see what you're talking about. Yeah.
But why don't you just follow me? All right. We're going to get into this, but you follow over 2,000 people. So you don't really follow anybody.
Right. I follow you, but I like to just get like a okay, let me see what you're saying. Like you might have like tweeted something when I was sleeping. I'm not going to, right. You know. Go through.
Right,
go.
But you should only follow enough people that you could sort of scroll through. That's why I follow under 200 people, because that's still, you know, you go to the bathroom, whatever, you could still scroll down and see every tweet as long as you don't go away for like 24 hours. I rarely miss a tweet, where once you get like over 250, it's your full-time job to read tweets then.
Yeah.
And 2,000, forget it. You're not seeing anybody's.
Yeah. You also refer to yourself as podcaster's podcaster.
I don't know. I always write something stupid there. It's like, you know, Louis C.K. calls him himself like a comedian's comedian, or other people used to call him that.
Yeah.
So I thought the idea of like a podcaster's podcaster, that like no one thinks that I'm funny except other podcasters think I'm good at podcasting. That right. I thought like that was like a funny idea.
You're sort of like the person that the average person, the layman, they don't get you, but you're so right. good. And right. you
well,
don't-
I know I'm like, whatever. And I wouldn't say I'm good, but the, you know, I don't. It was just a dumb idea. I don't know. I really have to like. I didn't know you were even checking this stuff.
A very sophisticated palate. And so, you know, just like the average, you know, casual podcast listener doesn't quite get what you're putting down.
Right. We're working on it. We're 350 in between this and the sports show. We'll get there eventually.
Okay. And of course, yes, the aforementioned sports show. I'm very excited for the hot takeoff coming up, Keeve, on Thursday.
Yeah, you're going to join us. You're going to judge. I have a bunch of hot takes, scorching takes coming up. And
how's that
going
to work? I'm just going to be like thumbs up, thumbs down. Or I have to rate them.
I don't know. You got to figure this out. Maybe you'll rate them and then you'll tell us at the end, like a boxing match. Like you'll rate all 10 hot takes of mine and the listeners, and maybe Chester if he like mans up and does
it. Am I the only judge of hot takes? Because I think
once you get to 5 people on a podcast, it's like too much, because you can't do 2 judges. Who should be the other judges?
I'm just worried that there's going to be like something that I don't necessarily know about where somebody is talking about something.
Well, listen, how about people know that you're the judge, so they have to sort of know. We did get a hot take I won't use about you today, which was that you are definitely going to play Survivor again soon.
Okay. All right. Well, am I rating how hot that is, or am I rating?
No. Again, that didn't make the cut. I saw one about you.
But so if I think that's not that crazy, do I give it a low number, or if I think it's
really
bizarre?
Of course, that's a bad hot take. That's like, all right, fine. That's like a 2.5. You know it when you see it. Like, you know, I don't want to like spoil my good ones now. I might not have any good ones.
Okay.
But, I'm hoping for a 10. And
check
you
out
try and hit home runs on singles.
And the amazing Alexander Chester on the 32 Fans podcast, which I really do enjoy listening to. It is it is on my subscription list.
That's so kind of you. Thank you.
Although I don't really like it when you guys talk about sports that much.
Yeah, that's what we get. We get like, it's a sports podcast, ostensibly a football podcast. Anytime we do some sort of list or tournament or something, we get a lot of good feedback. When we talk about football, people are like, stop talking about football.
Right.
So I don't know what to do. It would be funny if people were like, I like Akiva and Rob's banter, but I don't like when they talk about Seinfeld. We get that, but we just don't like, people don't like the banter either. So they don't like either part of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just listen for the fights. That's what I'm into.
Yeah, there's a lot of fights there. We don't fight that much.
Yeah, but when you do, it's good.
When you and I fight?
No, when you and Chester fight.
I'm saying,
Chester
me
fight.
And you don't. See, we're never on the same page. Right. This is why okay. Our wives hate us.
All right. All right. Great stuff, Akiva. I appreciate you coming on at an ungodly hour, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Akiva Winokur back here on the voicemails, and always great to get Akiva back here on RHAP. I get to talk to him every week on post-show recaps, but it's always a treat to get him back on the mothership here on RHAP. All right, so switching gears, I am going to be talking with the host of our Survivor New Zealand wrap-ups. That would be Nick Yadanza from Survivor Australia, a.k.a. Australian Survivor. We're going to check in and talk about this season over the weekend, so be on the lookout for that. Plus, I'll be talking with Jessica Leese about what's going on The Amazing Race this week. That's going to be on our wrap-ups channel, so be on the lookout for that. Plus, I will also be talking with all of the people voted out in the Big Brother Canada triple eviction. And then next week is going to be our Toronto trip. So just be on the lookout. No live Survivor Know-It-Alls coming up this Wednesday. And then I will be bringing you the rest of our podcast from what's going on in Toronto. So I'm very excited for that trip. Also, I'm so excited to see so many of our Robin's Podcast patrons up in Toronto. I know that the patrons are getting together and planning a lot of stuff for those few days that we're going to be up there. So really looking forward to that. To find out more information about the benefits of becoming a patron of Robin's Podcast, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.